Move to the third case this morning, Milwaukee Police Association versus the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jonathan Cermelli on behalf of the appellants. After listening to the arguments on the prior two cases, I think I'm going to give you a much easier issue to resolve. I see this as a simple case. The issue stems from Wisconsin Statute 62.50 with stats. It applies to first-class cities, regulates police and fire commissions and the police department currently in the city of Milwaukee. That statute, or the issue under that statute, is whether it provides a legitimate claim of entitlement in continued employment for a Milwaukee Police Department employee who has been certified by the State of Wisconsin Law Enforcement Standards Board as a law enforcement officer. Number two, is considered by the Chief of Police as a police officer. Number three, is considered by the Chief of Police and the Department as a member of the police force, but nevertheless remains in an extended probationary period under local rule. In other words, a probation.
It's an interesting problem, but hasn't it been settled out from under us? Do we have any authority to address this?
You do, Your Honor. The court has, in an amended docketing statement, I believe I advised the court that there had been a release provided by Officer Ramskugler to the city of Milwaukee and other defendants. That is a full and complete release. That release was, however, conditioned upon the parties agreeing that the underlying issue that I just brought to the court would be resolved by this court if it so chooses.
Can you do that? Can you ask us to advise on this curious question?
I cannot ask you to advise. That's not what the federal courts do.
It doesn't have to be a real stakeholder here.
It does. There has to be a case in controversy, and that's my other client, the Milwaukee Police Association. The Milwaukee Police Association represents all non-supervisory police officers in the city of Milwaukee, 1,600 members. The Milwaukee Police Association has always been a named party to this action. The Milwaukee Police Association didn't waive any of its rights or release any of its claims. All it simply said to the city is, if we win, we're not going to seek damages or fees, but we want the issue resolved. And so did the city, because they agreed to it. So while this issue or this case is moot, arguably, as to Officer Ramskugler, I won't fight you on that. It is not. It is alive, and it has legs as far as the Milwaukee Police Association goes.
So if there is any real question in the suit, the only party that could bring it is Milwaukee Police Association, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. Now, if there's any questions about the extent of the releases, they can be found in Circuit Document 11.1. If we take a look at the statute in question, 6250.
What other officers, probationary officers, were terminated without a hearing for non-disciplinary reasons that were members of the MPA?
Historically,
yes.
Since I've been representing them?
Yes. What in the record shows?
The record does not show any others. And I think that's what I'm bound to address, is what is in the record. May I address that, though?
Yes, you may. In
terms of, you're asking retrospectively what has happened. Prospectively, I can tell you that the city has maintained its ability to refuse to provide a due process hearing to people that were in the same position as Officer Ramskugler. Now, that's not a unique position. The Milwaukee Police Department has approximately 2,000 men and women and is under almost a constant cycle of hiring new recruits and bringing them in. So this is not a speculative issue that we that my client, the MPA, will ever have somebody in this situation again.
Mr. Cermelli, before you try to convince us to decide the issue of Wisconsin state law,
yes, sir.
Is there any obstacle at this point to raising this issue in the state courts, just filing a declaratory judgment action in the Milwaukee county courts?
No, I don't think there is any obstacle. I think that what Judge Randa could have done was, rather than simply dismissing the constitutional claim, he could have said, I'm ruling against the MPA in favor of the city on the constitutional claim. Any state law issues remaining, I'm going to remand back down to the circuit court in Milwaukee. I think he could have done that. This case can be resolved by means of simply a declaratory judgment action under 80604 of the Wisconsin statutes. In other words, declare the rights and the obligations of the parties with respect to this statute, the due process rights. We brought it initially as a complaint for certiorari and declaratory judgment. We then amended to allege a due process claim, which allowed counsel to remove it to the Eastern District. So does that answer your question?
Well, not really. You all are suggesting that, but look, it doesn't make any sense for the three of us to decide this question of Wisconsin state law, right?
Well, that's I'm not going to say it doesn't make any sense. You're certainly competent to do so. I did follow what I understood was a procedure and asked the court to certify this matter.
Right. Which I understand that request, and it's a sensible one under the circumstances.
Thank you.
But the question is whether, since only state law claims remain, and it's only a declaratory judgment, in essence, now we're in the position of a district court facing a question of discretionary jurisdiction under the Declaratory Judgment Act. Should we exercise it? It's all state law. Why not just let the state courts handle this?
Well, I think if I were to agree with that and then refile on Monday morning in Milwaukee County Circuit Court, my guess is the defense that I would get from the defendants in this case, namely the city of Milwaukee, is that I had my one bite at the apple and I lost it. And so you don't get two kicks at the cat on the same issue with the same parties. You had the ability to have this issue resolved in the Seventh Circuit, or if the Seventh Circuit certified it to the state Supreme Court. That didn't happen, so you're done now. So I would ask that the court not entertain that concept.
Yeah, Judge Randa didn't decide this issue, did he?
He didn't. The statute provides, I believe, the statute provides due process protection. So what he said is, I'm going to look at this as I should. Is there a legitimate claim of entitlement to continued employment under these statutes? And he said no. Now, I think he said no incorrectly and wrongly, and I'm happy to explain why. But he essentially said that whenever a police officer is in a probationary status, he or she is not. By definition, a quote-unquote member of the police force. I think that's incorrect. It's at odds with what the record is. It's at odds with what the chief of police has acknowledged. It's at odds with the documents in the record. We have a situation here where the cases that are on point are Wisconsin cases. The first one is a 1981 decision, and it is, I believe, called, give me just one second, Kaiser versus Board of Fire and Police Commissioners. The second one comes from 2000, and it is Antisdal versus Oak Creek Board of Fire and Police Commissioners, and the third is from 2003, Prowse versus City of Waukesha. Our case doesn't fit any of those decisions quite easily. In Kaiser, and remember, this was a 1981 case, what it said, what the state Supreme Court said, is that an employee who still remained in that non-certified position by the Law Enforcement Standards Boards, in other words, has not completed the state-mandated minimum training, that's the facts in the Kaiser case. That employee does not have a due process right under 6213, which is a statewide counterpart to the statute I'm involved with, because he is hired not under that 6213, he is hired under Chapter 165, which is, addresses law enforcement standards. That's Kaiser, 1981. Kaiser says, quote, Kaiser was a probationary officer hired pursuant to Section 165.85. Therefore, his employment was controlled by his probationary status and not the general Section 6213 sub 5. Now let's move forward 19 years. Ann Tisdall. What does Ann Tisdall say? Ann Tisdall says that a newly promoted sergeant who is in a probationary status nevertheless does have a due process right to a hearing if he meets all the criteria in the statute. And they identified the criteria in, again, the statewide counterpart to my statute. They said he met it. He was a subordinate. He was suspended, reduced in rank, or removed based on charges filed by the chief. Importantly, what the Wisconsin Supreme Court said was that the policy rationales for using probationary status cannot be employed to deprive employees of procedural rights guaranteed by the legislature. The third case, Kraus, is really the same situation as Ann Tisdall, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court says, Mr. Kraus, you don't get a hearing because your demotion was not disciplinary. So what my case falls outside of the scope of Kaiser. Why? Because my case is dealing with an officer who has already completed the minimum state training mandated, is certified as a law enforcement officer, unlike Kaiser, is considered a police officer and a member of the police force. Kaiser's out the door. It does not control. Does Ann Tisdall control? It doesn't control, but it's pretty darn interesting because Ann Tisdall says even if you're a probationary supervisor, you get a hearing as long as you meet the criteria in the statute. What is the criteria in the statute? It's very simple. Sub 11, and this is without any exception for a police officer or a member of the police force who may be in a probationary status, sub 11 of 6250 prevents the discharge of any quote-unquote member of the police force until it conducts a due process hearing. Sub 13 guarantees a hearing to any quote-unquote member of the police force. Sub 14 requires the board to conduct a due process hearing if the officer requests one. Sub 17 requires, quote, just cause for the discharge. And sub 18 requires continued, quote, pay and benefits for members of the police force, unquote, until the Fire and Police Commission disposes of the case by means of conducting a hearing. Now, the city has argued that it doesn't matter that 6250 doesn't talk about probation. Doesn't matter that it doesn't mention probation. Because according to the city and the state of Wisconsin, probation means you're not entitled to a due process hearing. We know that's wrong because that's the Ann Tisdall case. The city does, I acknowledge, have administrative authority that was provided by the legislature. That administrative authority allows it to do some things, and I'm happy to get into that. What it does not allow the city to do is to carve out an entirely new class of police officers and members of the police force. In other words, those which have been already certified by the state and are considered officers and members of the force, but they're still in this extended probationary status that we feel as the city fathers is necessary. State doesn't think it's necessary, but we think it's necessary. The statutes do not allow them to carve out a new class of officers and members of the police force, and that's what they say they have the authority to do. That's not correct. That authority would be directly at odds with the statutory scheme, which is pretty darn clear in 6250.
Mr. Cimelli, if I could just ask you, I want to go back to this question about who decides this. I understand that because you all got your association got involved as a party, you might face a res judicata issue in a new lawsuit. But what would be wrong with simply waiting until the next time there's a live case like this, and then that new officer, that new probationary officer, pursues this claim in state court? and that person presumably would not be bound by the judgment in this case.
That person would not. Judge Randa's decision, although not controlling, would be persuasive. And my guess is...
It would be your job to persuade otherwise.
It would be, just as it's my job to persuade you...
In state court.
In state court, just as today it's my job to try to persuade you that Judge Randa got it wrong and that there is a claim, a legitimate claim of entitlement. I think if we're going to look at what authority the city has, we have to look at the statutes that provide... Sorry, red light.
Go ahead and finish up what thought you're on now.
The statute that provide it with administrative authority. Those statutes are simple. I can't wrap this up within 2 minutes, but I would invite the court to look at 6250 sub 3A and B. They're very clear. And they're very circumspect. They say the board may prescribe rules for the government of members. Government of members doesn't allow them to create a new class of police officers. It says the board shall adopt rules to govern the selection and appointment of people employed by the police department. My clients have already been appointed. They're police officers. They're appointed the day they enter in the academy. And it says that the board may provide for the classifications of position and service and a special course of inquiry and examination for candidates for each class. We're not talking about candidates for each class. We're talking about people that have already been recognized by the state of Wisconsin and the city of Milwaukee as police officers and members of the police force. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Counsel. Reagan. Mr. Reagan, let me ask you initially, could you compare this? Is there any, do you see any comparison between admission to the bar, passing the bar, being authorized to practice law, but not having full employment by whoever your employer might be?
Well, I think whoever you're employed by can certainly set terms. Regarding probationary status or other status. If you're a brand new lawyer out of law school, you haven't been vetted. An employer certainly can decide that a certain amount of training, process, evaluation is necessary. So I think in this regard, what Kaiser and Krauss put forward is that employers, specifically law enforcement employers, have a very particular important need and goal to train the officers before they're fully vetted to become regular appointed members of the department.
I know at least one state, Indiana, has similar provision for certifying law enforcement officers. Which includes not only a state police academy, but large departments which have their own recognized by the state to do it. Is that how it works in Wisconsin?
Well, in Wisconsin, there's a law enforcement standards board, which really has to do with certification. The Milwaukee Police Department, for example, would hire an appointee. That appointee would go through training, graduate the academy. Then, as a matter of course, the department would seek certification so that police powers could be conferred on the appointee.
And I guess my question is, as a Milwaukee, probably the largest department in Wisconsin, do they have their own police academy where they actually go for training much as they would in the state academy?
I don't know comparatively to the state, but the Milwaukee has standards, training standards, much higher than the LESB board.
Do they go, well, let me put it another way, do they go away someplace to be trained or do they stay in Milwaukee?
There's a training academy in Milwaukee.
Okay.
That is staffed by Milwaukee.
And it's very recognized by the state as equivalent to the one that most small departments go to.
Correct. Correct. And but the training is much more rigorous in Milwaukee as a first-class city. To start off, I wanted to touch upon the standing issue, the mootness issue. The council has conceded that Ms. Rams-Kugler no longer has standing in this action. I would contend that Milwaukee Police Association also does not have standing because they have no injury in fact, and that their injury is really only derivative of Ms. Rams-Kugler's injury. And to do that, you only really have to look at the amended complaint. The Milwaukee Police Association and the amended complaint pleads no injury at all. They said, sure, they have an interest in knowing the law for their members and ensuring due process protections, but they don't allege any injury. For example, they didn't plead that they, as an association, have had to spend time or money or resources in defending their members. There's no allegation of a reasonable probability of suffering a tangible harm by the Milwaukee Police Association. Instead, they simply say they have an interest in telling their membership the law.
Well, isn't there a pretty well crystallized dispute here, though? Not applicable to any one member anymore, but clearly a dispute between the MPA and the city over this issue of state law.
I think there is a dispute over the state law.
Okay. And typically that's the kind of thing that, for example, a federal court could exercise discretionary jurisdiction over through a declaratory judgment action. So why shouldn't we just go ahead, let's get this resolved, certify the question to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and if they're willing to give us an answer, we'll all know what to do going forward.
Well, I would argue that the MPA has not pled an injury in fact, and there would be really no way to redress any injury by a decision of that nature.
No, it's the threat of some future injury. A tenant and a landlord who have a disagreement about whether an option can be exercised 5 years from now. They want to know now, and the courts can tell them. Why shouldn't we get that done now?
Well, that's certainly within your discretion. In your questions earlier, tend to agree that the MPA ought to file some kind of action in state court.
If they do so, would you claim that this issue has been resolved definitively against them?
I don't think I can argue that. I would also say, though, if you filed Monday morning, I would assert a defense of notice of claim. But I think he would know that. I would also think that he ought to bring in another member that suffered the harm. But certainly, no, I don't think that Judge Randa's decision I think is persuasive, but not
binding.
Not binding.
Is there a concern that the Milwaukee Police Association wouldn't pursue this as vigorously as someone down the road who would have been in the same position, who would be in the same position as Ms. Rams-Kugler was?
I can't really speak for the Milwaukee Police Association. I can tell you that they vigorously defend all of their alleged claims, so I don't know why this would be any different. Which sort of leads you to the question of prudential standing. Why, you know, Ms. Rams-Kugler was the one with alleged to have the injury in fact, and she chose to settle. And therefore, really, there's no longer any Article III standing. And while the MPA alleged in the amended complaint that they have the right to be representatives or have some advocacy, advocacy is only appropriate and constitutionally undertaken on behalf of another when there's an injury, when there's an injury in fact. Regarding associational standing, with Ms. Rams-Kugler out, The appellants have not presented any member with standing to present in his or her own right. And the claim is solely pleaded by the association, but on the amended complaint, they haven't alleged any injury. In fact, didn't even include themselves in the prayer for relief. So I'd be happy to move on to the state law issues if you'd like. Ms. Ramskugler, unless you have more questions about standing. Ms. Ramskugler was a probationary appointee under the Fire and Police Commission board rule. She was an appointee for 16 months of actual service before becoming a regular member or a regular police officer. Certainly the LESG...
Does the state system have a probationary period as well?
When you say state system, you mean Capitol Police?
No. Let me. That was poorly phrased. When you come out and get your certification, is there any probation attached to any mention of probation?
No.
Status?
No. The LESB sets forth a policy recognition that probation is necessary and has.
Probation is necessary.
That probation is necessary for evaluation purposes, but that has to do with the whether or not police powers are conferred.
Right.
So what Krauss holds and what the statute allowed is for the Fire and Police Commission to practically exercise the appointment authority through classifications of positions, putting in their powers to evaluate specifically, we would argue, the status or the vetting of appointees to their ability to become regular members.
Are there other departments Wisconsin which have varying probation period requirements? Say Madison, for example.
Departments? Yes. Other classed cities of 6213, for example, also has board rule, allowing the Fire and Police Commission board rule to set classifications and probationary time. Does that answer your question?
Was this enacted by the city council or by the state legislature?
So the state legislature allowed the Fire and Police Commission to set up board rules for the training and classification of members. And so it was set up by the legislature and then enacted by the Fire and Police Commission.
The legislature said you can set a probationary period if you meet whatever requirements are, and then it's up to each municipality to set up their own probationary period.
Well, the statute does not say probationary period, but what it does say is set up classification for the good conduct of members, training, and Krauss and Kaiser set these two cases set forward that probationary is inherent in that authority. That setting up probationary period for the vetting and training, the evaluation of good conduct and fitness is inherent in that rulemaking authority and setting up the classification for training.
Do the state universities grant tenure to brand new faculty members?
I assume they don't, mm-hmm. unless by agreement. So one other interesting point is that I know there's sort of this inherent discussion about 6213 was Krauss and Tisdale, and that's different than 6250, which we're dealing with. But there was a recent case, Grykowski, that confirmed that 6213 and 6250 have the same function and are equivalent statutes. So in this case, Ms. Ramskugler was terminated during her probationary period for a non-disciplinary reason, so Antisdale would not apply. but was terminated during her probationary period for truly an inability, a physical inability, to resume her training or finish her training. So it was a non-disciplinary termination. It was not a disciplinary discharge. It was a non-disciplinary termination. And in this case, Ms. Rams-Kugler had a remedy. Her remedy was to seek reappointment upon recuperation from her injury that allowed her, that didn't allow her to continue her training. And she took advantage of that reappointment rule, although it was not successful. But since there was, she was not charged with any disciplinary misconduct, there was really nothing for her to appeal under 6250.17. There were no charges filed. And so Krauss applies because it was a non-disciplinary termination for an inability to continue the training.
Ms. Regan, as part of the settlement with Officer Rams-Kugler, did you all pay any money?
Yes.
Does she have to pay it back if we dismiss this appeal?
No. She we settled for monetary benefit, and then she also waived any right to a hearing, any right for reinstatement.
Thank you.
Ms. Regan, just quickly, that recent case you mentioned, Rakowski or Greg?
Oh, Gregkowski.
Is it in your brief?
It's actually in my opposing counsel's brief.
Opening brief?
It's in his rebuttal brief.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
You didn't have any time left, counsel. You're out. Thanks to both counsel. Interesting problem. The case will be taken under advisement.